The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I mean, all of the complaints about the United States across the globe are that we're too powerful, that our military is too powerful, that our dollars too powerful, that our economy is too powerful, that we're running over even our allies, that we're stronger than we've ever been. That's what our friends and enemies are saying.
Sure, Joe. Everything's perfect. Everything in the United States is just, but the border security, perfect. Inflation, no problems there. The dollar's strong. The military, perfect. Even his hair is perfect. Everything is like his hair. Everything is working just fine. If you listen to the talking heads, if you listen even to the Biden administration. I'll play an astounding clip for you in just a moment from the French lady about how the border is totally secure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show. You know how to get to the live stream. That's at trumpetdaily.com. You can also go over to our Rumble channel. Just search for the Trumpet Daily on Rumble, and you can watch the live stream there. On most days, sometimes I have a little trouble with it, but hopefully those things are being ironed out on both ends. But the Rumble channel will be worth checking that out anyway, just to see some of the programs after the fact, if you don't want to go to our website. Either way, you can get to this show. Of course, you can have it downloaded to your device as well and listen, as many people do, on demand. But we love having the live audience. We enjoy the live broadcast for sure. We love the adrenaline that really contributes to this whirlwind effort each morning. And of course, we're most appreciative. For God's direction, for God's insights, for the Holy Bible, for the sure word of Bible prophecy. We view all the events of this world through that particular lens. So there's one commentator just going on and on about how America, I guess, has never been in a stronger position. He said everything about the economy is strong. Just the other day, the government had to intervene to shut down First Republic, the second biggest bank failure in America's history. And there's all these stories this week talking about how it's just basically the tip of the iceberg. J.P. Morgan, I guess, intervened yesterday to buy it out. But it wasn't that long ago we were talking about the Silicon Valley Bank. This is from the Wall Street Journal. SVB's core problem was that it owned a lot of government debt funded by unstable deposits. It says, as interest rates rose sharply last year, the mark-to-market value of that debt plummeted. And deposits became more expensive and scarcer. It says a lot of banks own similarly devalued bonds, but that's just the tip of the debt iceberg, it says. Since the end of 2009, note that, the end of 2009, you had the big crash in 2008, and then Obama, he arrived at the perfect time to just spend trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars to bottom out interest rates. I mean, it was just party time. From 2009 on, and then everything started to collapse last year as Joe Obama continued on spending, rather printing, trillions of dollars, worthless dollars. That's where it's headed. That's prophesied. We've talked before about the coming economic collapse, and you see runaway inflation happening right now. You see American citizens, ordinary Americans, being punished by this radical administration because of the runaway printing of dollars, and it's making those dollars worthless. It's interesting that this article points back to 2009. It's all part of the fundamental transformation. Listen to this. It says, since the end of 2009, total debt owed by governments, business, and households has risen 90% to $68 trillion, according to the Federal Reserve. $68 trillion in debt. I talked about just swimming in sin. What about debt? What about swimming in dollars that are becoming more and more worthless? Swimming in debt. There's another article just speaking of the economy here at the outset, also from the Wall Street Journal. Commercial real estate has experienced its share of busts in recent decades. This one is different. The sudden surge in interest rates caused property values to fall, while the rise of remote work and e-commerce are reducing demand for office and retail space. You've got some of these big skyscrapers in America's biggest cities that are 80, 90% empty. I mean, and this, of course, you make the connection to COVID, obviously, and that was man-made, of course, used as a pretext to destroy Donald Trump. I mean, what a world! And to get up there and say everything's just working perfectly, it's dishonest. They're lying, is what they're doing. Here they're trying to sell off these high rises in big cities at fire sale prices. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Before the pandemic, San Francisco's California Street was home to some of the world's most valuable commercial real estate. The corridor runs through the heart of the city's financial district and is lined with offices for banks and other companies that help fuel the global tech economy. FRC, I believe they were headquartered in San Francisco. Of course, Silicon Valley, that bank, is in Silicon Valley, and here there's entire high-rises that are just emptying out in that same area. And people want to tell you that it's perfect in California or otherwise, or in the United States. There's a lot of problems, crisis upon crisis. And you hear a good deal about that on this program. And we try to balance it, obviously, with the hope for tomorrow, as I said on yesterday's show. I mean, that's all there in the latest issue of the Trumpet magazine, a very uplifting, a very inspiring vision of the future brought out in this particular issue. But coming back to the lies that you're getting from this administration and from their allies in the media, listen to KJP yesterday as she talked about the border, clip six.
He has tools that he's used to make sure that we do this. We actually deal with the immigration system in a humane way, and in a way that is that actually deals with what we're seeing at the border. And that's why you've seen the parolee program be so successful. When it comes to illegal migration, you've seen it come down by more than 90%, and that's because of the actions that this president has taken.
Immigration down by 90%. You know she doesn't believe that. But what do they say? Mayorkas, he can't even tell Congress that it's a crisis. He's talking about how everything's working perfect. They're all Joe Scarborough. They're all Chris Krebs. Yeah, everything about the election, perfect. Everything that's happening in the economy, just perfect. Everything that's happening in the military, just perfect. They can't even get people to enlist in the military. I mean, these are disasters that are coming on. We're just getting the outer edges of this perfect storm. 90% down, she says. You may have heard of this shooting in South Texas, this illegal that had been deported, I think, five times. And he came back, and he was shooting his gun off in the middle of the night, and the neighbors said, hey, can you quit shooting your gun so we can go to sleep? He went over and killed the whole family. Murdered the parents and three children. This is maybe one of the most gruesome stories of the year thus far. In a year that's been full of a lot of this, a lot of these horrific events. Democrats are wanting to disarm Americans. When there's just, you know, it's basically the wild, wild west out there, certainly at the border towns. Has CNN or Joe Scarborough, have they come forward about this illegal that came in and out of the United States? And now he's guilty of murder. This is from the Center for Immigration Studies. It says a Mexican national is on the run after slaughtering a family of five Hondurans next door, including an eight-year-old child in a small Texas town, a two-hour drive east from here, called Cleveland. It says American news media report the murdered parents had asked their next-door neighbor to stop firing his semi-automatic rifle at 11 p.m. on April 29 because they were trying to put the baby to sleep. Two other children survived under the bodies of their parents, who died shielding them. So I guess there were a couple of survivors. Now they don't have parents. It says here, but what no media has yet reported is that this horrific crime happened in what is regarded as America's largest settlement of illegal immigrants, one literally exploding in population amid U.S. government-fomented mass migration border crisis. And KJP has the gall to stand up and say, yeah, it's down 90%. In other words, it's virtually eliminated the illegal immigration. Here there's this makeshift town set up for illegals. And it's one of the fastest growing communities in the country because they're just pouring in across the border. A vast jumble of single and double wide trailers on low stilts, hand hewn shacks made of leftover construction material and parked motorhomes has quickly overtaken tens of thousands of Liberty County acres and eradicated its rural way of life. The community is named Colony Ridge. Upwards of 50,000 mostly Spanish-speaking Latinos, maybe more, nobody knows really, are living on some 30,000 homestead lots they purchased in recent years over some 35 square miles from Houston Terrenos, the land development company started by an original named William Henry Trey and his brother John Harris a decade earlier. So thousands, I mean, the police are making drug busts by the thousands in this area. I mean, the cartels basically running the show. All of this illegal activity. And then this nightmarish episode with the Mexican national that shot up the Honduran family. Fox News says a suspect on the run in the Texas shooting, an execution-style shooting, when they complained about him firing on his property, has been deported from the country five times. Five times. He was here illegally five times. And now he's a murderer. This is from the Daily Wire. It says here, Representative Tony Gonzalez said in an interview over the weekend that the illegal immigration crisis in the U.S. or at the southern border is set to get significantly worse as Joe Biden is letting the Title 42 emergency order expire. That happens next week. You think it's bad now. At least with Title 42, they could stop and say, you know, because of COVID and this and that, we're going to have to send you back. They had a good excuse to send them home. Now there won't be any of that. So we're just going to step aside and let them in. Let them come right into the country. It says the agents are beyond an exhausting point, and it's not just at the border. Now what you're seeing in places 100, 150 miles from the border are just as overwhelmed as if they were on the Rio Grande themselves, because they're being sent all over the city, all over the country, I should say, to big cities, Chicago, Atlanta, New York, San Francisco. CNN says here, detention facilities along the U.S.-Mexico border have surpassed capacity as a growing number of migrants cross into the United States leading up to the May 11 expiration of a COVID-era border restriction known as Title 42. This is CNN. This is a recent report. And you have the French lady standing up saying, it's all been fixed. It's all been taken care of. It's 90% down, actually. They lie. It says here, as of Saturday morning, there were more than 20,500 migrants in U.S. Customs and Border Protection custody along the U.S. southern border. I want to say the first 2 weeks of April, we were averaging about maybe 1,700 Venezuelan nationals entering illegally into the country through that particular area in Brownsville, said Gloria Chavez, Border Patrol Chief for the Rio Grande Valley sector. It says, and then 2 weeks later, towards the end, here the last 8 days, we saw an uptick of over 15,000 Venezuelans. They're coming all the way up from Venezuela by the thousands. These countries in South America, so many of them, they're just emptying out their prisons. All of their poverty-stricken people, they're sending their worst. And hey, United America will take care of it. And then Joe Scarborough says everyone's looking at America with envy. They're really impressed by our power, our strength, our economy. This and many other crises is just sucking the life right out of America. Die by suicide. Listen to Jesse Waters as he talks. I think this is regarding Chicago and some of the immigrants that end up there. Clip 7.
I felt like it was important to once again try to engage the governor, but also let him know what his policies and practices are doing in cities like Chicago. We are completely tapped out. We have no more space, no more resources. And frankly, we're already in a surge. We've been seeing over the last week, 200 plus people coming to Chicago every single day. We call them walk-ins because they're not coming on buses, but they are coming on planes from San Antonio. And we're very concerned because they don't seem like they're getting screened at the border. We've seen people coming with serious medical issues, Laura. We've seen people come off of these buses that he has sent who are victims of sexual assault, who have serious medical conditions that can't be dealt with by the paramedics that we have on site. They've got to be rushed to the hospital. Women who are in such an advanced stage of labor, they literally get off the bus and give birth within one of our facilities. That doesn't make any sense. So if we don't put the humanity of these migrants front and center, I understand, and I'm solely compassionate to the fact that the borders are themselves really overrun, but you don't solve that problem by simply sticking people on buses to a city that they didn't ask to come to for an uncertain future, and now where we are literally full.
Here's the story of Chicago. A couple years ago, they were a sanctuary city, and they were like, come one, come all. And then Trump wanted to do some ICE raids there because there were some bad hombres, and they said, no bueno, Trump's ICE. Stay out of Chicago. We're going to give them sanctuary. Now they're begging ICE to come back and deport these people.
See, it's all politics. Obviously, that was Mayor Lightfoot before you saw Jesse there at the end talking about just the city of Chicago, how it can't absorb anymore, begging for ICE to come back in. But when the bad orange man was in office, no, you stay out of Chicago. Just let the drugs and the crime run wild. Let the illegal immigrants run wild. The way they view it is that everything is perfect except Donald Trump. He's public enemy number one. Go after Trump. Andy McCarthy had just a shameful column. He stood up for Trump years ago when they were harassing him, spying on him illegally. Obama's people. That's right. Joe Obama. McCarthy says this. No, I'm not playing along. His title is Why Trump Can't Win. And, you know, there's a lot of people that think this because they know the dirty little secret. They know how election laws were changed behind closed doors, not because of state legislatures. You had the perfect COVID excuse. Who knows what they'll come up with this next election cycle. But as I said yesterday, I mean, you look at the White House press or correspondence dinner. And Joe Biden, he's sounding pretty confident. He doesn't realize that Obama's about to pull the rug out from him. But they're going to do everything they can to cheat their way to victory again. If it's not Joe Biden, it'll be some good Democrat, a real communist through and through. And they'll find a way to cheat. Why Trump Can't Win sends a... How come there aren't other columns once in a while? I mean, there's lots of politicians. Let's see. Why Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, why she can't win? Or what about Nikki Haley or some of the ones running for Republicans right now for the Republican ticket? Why Nikki Haley can't win? You never see those. You don't even see why Joe Biden can't win. It's only Trump. Think about that for a moment. Why Donald Trump can't win? He says, no, I'm not playing along. At this point, I concede only that we cannot say with certainty who will be elected president. in November 2024. That said, I am as certain as I am writing this that Donald Trump will never again be elected president of these United States. He sounds exactly like Obama. He sounds exactly like all of them back in 2016 as well. I am absolutely certain that Donald Trump cannot win. McCarthy says, understand that while I could no longer in good conscience vote for Trump, I'm not a Trump hater. Well, that's exactly what he is. He can't do. If Joe Biden ends up being there next to Trump, it's just those two, he would vote Biden. He's voted Trump twice, but now he's in the never Trump camp. Now he just cannot do it. He can't bring himself to do it. You look at all of these problems with the economy, with the border, with the military. Who do you think would have greater success in fixing some of that? A lot of it's too far gone. But again, just look at the track records. Judge by fruits. I mean, in this column, he acknowledges so many of the good things that Donald Trump did for 4 years. Now he says he should be in prison. Oh, okay. So he's right there with the DOJ. You know, there was a time when he defended Trump against these DOJ and FBI attacks. Nonstop attacks. But not now. You see, it's not the Biden crime family that should be put in prison. It's Donald Trump. Donald Trump. He says, I can't do that anymore. I can't vote for him anymore. I believe Trump should have been impeached on an array of high crimes and misdemeanors in 2021. It's unbelievable. These people, they're blinded by Trump derangement syndrome. They can't see anything. They're all Joe Scarborough. They really are. Some of them see a few problems here and there, but Donald Trump certainly can't do anything about it. We've got to put him to prison and just kind of turn a blind eye to everything else happening in Chicago, at the southern border, New York City. It says here, I have to answer for having rationalized Trump's unfitness for office. Further on, he says, the greatest peril for the country is 4 more years of Democrats in power. The difference this time around is that Trump's nomination would guarantee that this peril becomes our reality. So Trump can't win. He can't win. So let's get him out of the picture. And boy, they're trying, aren't they? They want to blot him out. They want to erase him. It says here, Donald Trump has done more to bring them about. Let me back up. It says, if you're upset about the catastrophe at the southern border, woke ascendancy, reckless government spending, soaring debt and interest rates, and military and policy unpreparedness for the increasing perils overseas, Donald Trump has done more to bring them about than any Democrat you could name other than Biden. Donald Trump? This is laughable. It's like Joe Scarborough's statement at the top of the show. He's responsible. Okay, Biden is pretty bad, but, you know, Trump can't win. It's such a tired and repetitive diatribe. We hear it all the time, don't we? I mean, there's been hundreds of columns just like that. This time it comes from Andy McCarthy. It's just amazing. They hate Trump so much that they're willing to just step aside and let Biden have another 4 years, I guess. The filth that's all around, and they just can't take their eyes off Donald Trump. You know that God's hand is involved if there's that kind of satanic obsession with just getting one man who's not even a criminal. Just get him out of the way. Just lock him away somewhere so that we never have to hear from him again. And then meanwhile, look at all of the criminal behavior that's going on in the country. Yesterday, we learned that Jeffrey Epstein had a few more clients. You know, he died, 4 years ago? Many people say he was murdered. Yesterday, we learned about his private calendar. I guess it's from visits that he had set up after 2008, when everyone knew about his reputation. They knew what he was engaged in. And yet still, this is the Wall Street Journal. William Burns, he's the, it says here, he's the current director of the CIA, appointed by Joe Biden in March of 2021. The Wall Street Journal says William Burns, director of the CIA since 2021, had three meetings scheduled with Epstein in 2014 when he was deputy secretary of state, the documents show. Three meetings with Epstein in 2014 when everyone knew he was a pedophile. What is the director of the CIA meeting with Jeffrey Epstein for? And furthermore, how come we don't hear anything about the clients of Jeffrey Epstein? We've got some of the travel logs, you know, Bill Clinton and others involved in it. But here they're, when they find out that a whistleblower is going to make the DOJ look bad, I mean, it doesn't take them 2 seconds to find out he's a white supremacist and to go through all of his things and to find the air rifles to tell you that he's dangerous, he's a criminal, he's this, this, and this. And yet we know nothing. We know nothing except for disconnecting the dots. You know, the Lolita Express, the Epstein Island. We know about Epstein's sins, so many of them. And yet the media, they're just, you know, they've gone quiet on that. I mean, he was working in cahoots with a lot of powerful people, the elites, you could say. The Wall Street Journal says here, Catherine Rumler, a White House counsel under President Barack Obama, had dozens of meetings with Epstein in the years after her White House service and before she became a top lawyer at Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated in 2020. He also planned for her to join a 2015 trip to Paris and a 2017 visit to Epstein's private island in the Caribbean. This is outrageous. It's like the Biden crime family. How far reaching does this go? Right now, I guess we're at 9 members of the Biden family receiving payments from the communist Chinese. Payments? For what? Noam Chomsky, he's a prominent left-wing activist. Several appointments with Epstein. I mean, Epstein, boy, it sounds like he got around pretty good. No wonder. No wonder so many talking heads have gone silent. The Wall Street Journal says Ms. Rumler had a professional relationship with Epstein in connection with her role at the law firm Latham & Watkins, LLP, and didn't travel with him. A Goldman Sachs spokesman said, Epstein introduced her to potential legal clients such as Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates. The spokesman said, I regret ever knowing Jeffrey Epstein, Ms. Rumler said. And let's just leave it at that. Yeah, I do regret the relationship. I do apologize that that's been revealed, some of them have now said. And maybe it wasn't the best judgment. But given how easy it is for the communist media to just destroy someone, there was a story of someone who's guilty of trespassing on Jan 6. He's going off to prison for 5-6 months. A trespassing. Just walking in. You know about the guy that was in there for 19 seconds. If that's such a serious crime, what about what was going on at Epstein Island? Listen to Jesse Waters as he talks about this latest revelation about Epstein's private calendar. Clip 8.
It's been 4 years since billionaire pedophile Jeffrey Epstein was arrested. So why do we still know nothing about him? Well, we're finding out tonight some answers. The Wall Street Journal just got its hands on Jeffrey Epstein's private calendar. And it was a lot more suspicious than Brett Kavanaugh's. Epstein was meeting with the kind of people you'd think would steer clear of a convicted pedophile. Jeffrey Epstein was meeting with one of Barack Obama's top lawyers, Catherine Rumler. She met with Epstein dozens of times. Epstein even tried to set up Obama's lawyer to work for Bill Gates. How is Jeffrey Epstein a fixer between Obama's lawyer and Bill Gates? Epstein was also meeting with Joe Biden's CIA director. He wasn't CIA director at the time. He was Barack Obama's deputy secretary of state. William Burns was working for John Kerry at the State Department and meeting with Jeffrey Epstein, a known pedophile. And then Burns becomes CIA director. Huh. A few years later, Epstein was arrested and then hung himself in a jail cell while security cameras just happened to not be working and the replacement guards just happened to fall asleep. And 2 years later, Biden just happens to pick William Burns to run the CIA. So what are we supposed to think? It's never been more clear. Epstein was an intelligence asset. Not only was he working for the CIA, Israeli intelligence, maybe even Russia intelligence. So is the American government allowing an asset to traffic and molest teenage girls all over the world for intelligence? Were we allowing Epstein to commit crimes against children for blackmail material? So Obama's State Department official couldn't have asked anybody else in the entire country for help with a job in finance? He could have called any CEO, any hedge fund manager, any banking director. But he meets with Jeffrey Epstein, a guy that doesn't even really have a real business. So when someone does something that doesn't make any sense, maybe it's because they don't want to be doing what they're doing. Maybe it's because someone's telling them what to do and threatening to release the tapes if they don't. I could think of a few people whose actions I can't explain, but it wouldn't be fair of me to name names.
That's Jesse from his show last night. Again, a story that just is completely ignored, even covered up by most in the media. Look at the lawsuit going on in Arkansas with Hunter Biden, his stripper affair, and the illegitimate child that came out from that relationship, the one that Joe Biden doesn't even acknowledge. And Hunter's now trying to reduce the payments to that woman for child support. He says it's too much. I mean, it is an astronomical figure. This is from Fox News. Yet another story, virtually ignored by the talking heads. Hunter Biden, son of Joe Biden, appeared in person in an Arkansas courtroom Monday for a hearing in the child support case of his unclaimed 4-year-old daughter born out of wedlock. London Roberts, the mother of the 4-year-old Navy Joan Roberts, had reached an agreement with Hunter in 2020 for the child's paternity and child support payments. The case was reopened when Biden requested adjustments to the child support payments. In December, Roberts' lawyers filed a motion to have the girl's last name changed to Biden. During Monday's hearing, Biden's new attorney, Abby Lowell, said the president's son is paying $20,000 a month to the plaintiff. So Hunter Biden, he's so wealthy that the arrangement made with this woman, going back 4 years, was $20,000 per month. And then you look at some of the figures with the rental in Malibu, $20,000 per month for rent. I mean, the Burisma gig, he was getting somewhere between $50,000 and $80,000 a month. That alone is not going to provide for these kinds of bills. These people have been raking in millions and millions of dollars, and much of it coming from overseas, from America's adversaries. Crimes in plain view. Listen to Laura Ingraham and Miranda Devine discuss this case last evening, clip 5.
Well, a paternity case might be exactly what we needed to get the details behind the Biden's family's shady business dealings. The judge today ordered Hunter Biden to provide written answers and sit for a deposition next month on overseas funding that he's received, any documents on the work he did with Chinese energy companies, and details on his art sales.
There's a lot of financial transactions that Hunter Biden has kept secret from the world and that I'm sure his father and the White House don't want publicized either. But as you say, maybe this little tiny courthouse in Batesville, Arkansas, and this plucky young woman, London Roberts, who's insisting, no matter how much pressure she's placed on, she is insisting that her 4-year-old daughter, Hunter Biden's daughter, gets her just desserts.
In communication with our witnesses and with people who are cooperating from a subpoena standpoint, we know that they've been contacted by the attorneys for Hunter Biden. We feel that this is really close to crossing the line. Obviously, their objective, in my opinion, is witness intimidation. This will not stand. We're going to continue to press forward.
Hunter has the best attorneys money can buy, teams and teams of them. Who is paying for them? Well, it's these Democrat dark money groups. These are gifts that he's been given. Presumably, they should be subject to tax, and at least they should be subject to London Roberts child support. So it is a scorched earth policy that they're pursuing. They are intimidating witnesses left, right, and center.
Wouldn't it be amazing if this tiny little courthouse and one little judge from Arkansas ends up bringing down, or at least fully exposing, the Biden crime family? This is from Jonathan Turley. It says, despite assembling a new legion of doom of high-priced lawyers and advisors, Hunter is claiming that he simply cannot meet demands for child support. He can't afford it. He can't afford the $20K every month. And maybe the money is drying up to some degree. But still, I think they're probably regretting making this request before the judge to reduce the payments, because now the judge is saying, all right, let me see your financials. Let me see your sources of income. Let me see how much you're making on your paintings. Given his opposition to such support for years and reported millions in foreign dealings, it would seem transparently absurd. It is even more difficult to accept as he jets between his luxurious mansions in Malibu to digs at the White House. The public reportedly pays more for his security in his mansion than he does in monthly support for his daughter. He's just filthy rich. He's living on the Biden reputation. He's living off the pay-to-play schemes. He was the bag man. He was the money collector. And not paying all the taxes that he was supposed to pay, among other crimes. It says here, the public reportedly pays more for it. Well, I read that. There is, however, a crushing karmic aspect to Hunter being forced to appear in Arkansas. The judge made that determination last week, I believe it was. No, you're going to have to come down here. You can't just handle this from, you know, in D.C. or wherever. You can't hide out in the White House. Says his efforts to limit his child support may have backfired and could prove costly. Hunter has struggled to conceal his finances, including money that he received from alleged influence peddling. It's kind of like dropping off the laptop at that technician's shop. What a boomerang that turned out to be. And now here he's complaining to this judge, I can't afford $20,000. Well, let me look at your finances. I'll determine whether or not you can afford it. If you're living in this mansion at Malibu, if you're raking in this amount of money for your paintings, well, then maybe you do owe her $20,000 per month. As I say, it's going to be fascinating to watch, particularly if this ends up exposing so many more of their crimes. So there's all this, as I say, and yet it's, if you believe Andy McCarthy, the only really big problem that we need to worry about here is canceling Donald Trump. Or you listen to the way that they celebrate over Tucker Carlson being canceled, as if that's the most important development in the history of the United States. This was a piece at PJ Media regarding the, I guess I could probably paraphrase it, but Megyn Kelly, I guess, said last week that technically speaking, Tucker wasn't actually fired. He's still under contract with Fox. I guess it seems like there would have to be some kind of negotiation for exit. But Megyn Kelly's view is that Fox wants to keep him under contract so that he can't go somewhere else. It says here, if Tucker Carlson was so peremptorily told that he wasn't going to be allowed to do any more shows and couldn't even access his company email, he couldn't say a proper farewell either to those who watched his show or to his staff. This was an odd way for Suzanne Scott and Fox to treat their principal attraction. She just called him up and said, yeah, you're not going to be doing any more shows here. It says here, and it doesn't seem likely that it would allow for a friendly separation. Toward the end, this is PJ Media, it says, will Fox let Tucker Carlson go and establish himself elsewhere, or will the network force him into silence for the remainder of his contract? A third possibility would be for Carlson to find some way to honor his contract while speaking out on current events at the same time. It says, the nation is watching. It's just not watching Fox News. That's pretty brutal, but that's true. The ratings, his final Friday show, I think it was at 2.65 million. Generally, he was more around 3 to 3.5 million. Sometimes with explosive events happening, he'd pull in more than 4 or 5 million. But basically, Fox went from 3 million viewers in the 8 o'clock time slot to 1.3 million in less than 7 days. Listen to Megyn Kelly from her podcast as she talks about the plummeting ratings and also on this vicious attack coming from the higher-ups at Fox aimed at Tucker, clip one.
The ratings that we now have for Thursday show the, I don't know if you want to call it a boycott of his 8 p.m. hour, continues. They continue to have record low numbers in his spot where Thursday previously, Tucker had pulled in 3 million. The previous Thursday, the 8 p.m. hour got half that, 1.5 million. Media Matters for America releases another mysterious outtake of Tucker on set speaking frankly. This happened last week. Two videos were released. This is all an orchestrated hit job, in my opinion, and it's not a subtle one. It's not enough to fire you, Haya. You must be destroyed, and it doesn't matter how nice a guy you were, how many points you put on the board for the channel, that you brought us through the Trump years, that you were number one in your time slot, that you haven't said one negative word about us. You will be destroyed to settle some angry, bitter, internal PR hacks, personal vendetta against you.
It's not enough, she says there. It's kind of like David Plouffe, the Obama acolyte, that said, it's not enough. It's not enough to just beat Donald Trump. We've got to destroy him. It's the same spirit going after Tucker Carlson. And Megyn Kelly points out there, that's what they're doing in management. They want to prevent him from ever speaking again. He's that big of a problem. That's right up on the same level as Trump derangement syndrome. And even if your ratings are plummeting, they're still quite happy to do it. They're obsessed with it, in fact. And Tucker may be just the first of a few more that are about to go. Maria Bartiromo, I'm sure she's looking over her shoulder. This is from Rolling Stone. It says, top on-air presenters are openly worrying about getting fired at Fox. Management is on the prowl for leakers, and the leakers themselves are dodging snitches by putting fake names in their phone to hide incoming calls from reporters. It says Fox News' first week of life after Tucker Carlson got fired was a strange one indeed. Maria Bartiromo and Jeanine Pirro, two longtime hosts and Donald Trump allies, have told friends they're concerned they could be sacked next, according to two sources familiar with the situation. I mean, what's happening at Fox is inexplicable. I mean, how do you destroy yourself in the process of purging the network of Trump supporters? That's, I guess, how far they're willing to go. The video of Tucker that was released this week from New York Times, I mean, he's just basically there on his Fox Nation set saying, you know, Fox Nation is garbage. It was kind of refreshing to hear. He was speaking openly and candidly about how that the people that designed the website, it's hard to find Tucker's material. And of course, the only people that went to Fox Nation were the ones looking for Tucker's material. So now Fox Nation really is trash. They've lost the 8 p.m. time slot. And yet everyone rejoices. Everyone rejoices. Listen to the late night funny man, unfunny man, I guess I should say, Stephen Colbert. He got back from a week off and said this last evening, clip three.
We have been off the air for a week. You know who else has? Tucker Carlson. The difference is, I'm allowed back on. Tucker Carlson's exit remains a mystery. Yes, a mystery. You can read all about it in Nancy Drew and the case of why didn't this happen years ago?
Wow, that's some really, really funny material from the late night funny man, Stephen Colbert. He's a political hack, just like all of them. And speaking of perfect timing. How do you do that last night? And then you get up this morning and you see the headline from Deadline that says late night shows to shut down immediately after Writers Guild strike called. This man's got something like 17 or 18 writers that work on the show coming up with the Nancy Drew jokes, coming up with a Tucker Carlson got fired joke. And those guys go on strike and these guys can't get out and say anything. They're hacks, every one of them. They can't think for themselves. They can't speak for themselves. All that they can do is spout off with the narrative. And even then, I mean, they've got to have teams. I mean, imagine if this show had a team of 17 writers just producing content constantly for, it's just an hour. You take away all the commercials and what? He's also talking with guests. I don't think that's all scripted. So for like 10 or 12 minutes of material, they've got to have a team of writers writing jokes that he can get up and say. And they're not even funny ones. That's what's hilarious about this. So he goes on. You know what the difference? Me and Tucker, he's off for a week, but I get to come back. And then the next day, the headline says, can't come back tonight. No writers. It's brilliant. It's brilliant, the timing of it all. And quite honestly, hilarious. This is the most I've laughed about late night comedy in years and years and years. When we come back, you want to stay with us because we've got our weekly segment on news of the work. That's right after a short promo. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Spring is a busy time for the Agriculture Department at headquarters. The Agriculture Program is a feature of the headquarters campus. Through the program, agriculture employees work to implement godly regenerative agriculture practices, beautify the land, and affordably promote good health, among other goals. As the weather warms, agriculture staff are focusing on planting seedlings in the campus garden, which produces fruits and vegetables for the campus kitchen. 1 acre of campus is devoted to the garden. The garden supplies the kitchen with large amounts of produce in the summer, helping offset rising food prices and providing staff and students with healthy, organic produce. Last year, the garden produced around 4,200 pounds of fruits and vegetables. 1,200 pounds of that was watermelon, which campers ate during the summer educational program in July. This spring, staff have been using the greenhouse to prepare organic, non-GMO seedlings for the garden and to sell to local members. 2 more greenhouses are in the works, which will allow the department to extend the garden's growing seasons and produce more seedlings next year. One of the new greenhouses will be used to grow flowers and shrubs to help offset campus landscaping costs. 36 acres of campus are used for livestock pasture. Having multiple pastures allows staff to rotate the 33 cows and more than 90 sheep between the fields on campus. So far this year, campus livestock have provided the kitchen with more than 2,600 pounds of meat. Spring is also lambing season. The sheep have produced more than 30 lambs so far this year, with more on the way. 500 to 600 free-range chickens keep the kitchen supplied with eggs to feed staff and students. So far this year, the chickens have provided more than 22,000 eggs. March in particular was a strong month, with just over 8,000 eggs produced. Surplus eggs are sold to local members. On our sister campus at Edstone, spring is also in the air. A new greenhouse was recently constructed on the Edstone campus to grow flowers and vegetables, which should help offset rising prices and produce shortages. A new cowshed was also built to shelter animals during cold and wet weather. Edstone staff are anticipating the birth of lambs very soon. Whether in Edmond or Edstone, the agriculture departments are gearing up for a busy and productive summer supporting the work of God. To learn more about the work of the Philadelphia Church of God, please visit pcg.church.
There you have it. News of the work, the agricultural program right here on this campus. One of many things happening on this campus every day. 8,000 eggs in 1 month. That's impressive. And it comes at a good time. The cost for eggs, if you haven't noticed, they've skyrocketed like the cost for everything else in the last 2 years. My wife and I have probably helped ourselves to dozens of those 8,000 eggs in 1 month. There's a section, by the way, in this this middle page spread, the infographic in the latest Trumpet magazine. I know I drew attention to this yesterday. Just a beautiful vision of tomorrow's world and what cities will be like. It says about this fictional city, Ophiria. Here's the agricultural section at the lower right of the infographic. It says there's going to be an agricultural guild in the city center, a research center for farmers and all landowners. And it cites Micah 4 and verse 4. You can just look at some of these scriptures later if you'd like to. Farm and homestead supplies, a store for that. The dairy, the local dairy, milk, cream, cheese, and all of that good stuff, it says. And there it cites Jeremiah 33, verses 12 and 13. It says there would be a mill and then a winery as well. Award-winning, multi-generational estate. Tastings at the cellar door. And there it cites Proverbs 3 and verse 10 and Amos 9 and verse 14. So that News of the Work segment that you saw just now, I mean, it's an important part of campus life. It's something that I, you know, will ride my bike through almost every evening with my dog in a beautiful, beautiful environment to see the chickens, to see the cows, to see the sheep, to see the garden, and then also the impressive facilities. Armstrong Auditorium is right in the midst of it all. Our headquarters complex, this mail processing center that we also broadcast from, all of the dormitories, the field house, the gymnasium, the new gymnasium that's going up. And yet you walk through this hubbub of activity, and it's so peaceful, and you feel like you're out in the country, even though we're in the midst of all these modern buildings. It really is a wonderful way of life. Herbert Armstrong, when he was in Tunisia, this was back in 1979, he was visiting with the Tunisian prime minister. And it's from the PGR, this quote from 1979. It says, Mr. Armstrong explained the church's long interest in improving nutritional value everywhere, including various agricultural projects and studies that had been carried on for many years under the auspices of Ambassador College in Texas. I mean, in its heyday, whether it was Pasadena, especially Big Sandy with its ag program, but also Brickett Wood. I mean, what a wonderful vision, what a beautiful vision of tomorrow's life, of even the cities of tomorrow. Again, just to build on the theme that's in this recent Trumpet magazine, this was something that was very, very important to Herbert Armstrong, and it continues in its importance today for God's work today. And you see it here on this campus in Edmond, Oklahoma, and you see it on our sister campus at Edstone in the Midlands of the UK. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we will see you again tomorrow.